Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi David Kasher, new West Coast Director of Hadar Institute for Jewish Studies. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. One evening each week, I have the pleasure of studying Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, with my oldest son, Boaz, on Zoom for about an hour. He lives in Austin, Texas, so we see each other a couple of times a year in person. And of course, we didn't get to see each other at all during the COVID times. But every week, usually Monday night, we get together for an hour and study Torah. It all began a few years ago when my son said to me, "Dad, I can't think of anything you really need for your birthday, but I do have a suggestion. Why don't we spend an hour each week on Zoom doing whatever you want to do?" I jumped at the opportunity to spend uninterrupted quality time with my grown son, even online, and suggested, "How about if we study Torah together? We could read the weekly portion each week for a year." So, the first year, that's exactly what we did. He was enthusiastic, and we read the whole weekly portion together, discussing it each Monday night. And when the year was up, I suggested we just keep going. We continued with the book of Joshua, which follows the conclusion of Deuteronomy. Fortunately for me, Boaz was also really happy to do it. Well, we've now been doing this for, I believe, 3.5 years, and we just keep going through the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, in order. Some weeks, my dad, Rabbi Baruch Kohan, joins us. He's 97 now. Some weeks, my wife, Dr. Sophie Kohan, joins the study session. Once in a while, my middle son, Gabe, or my older daughter, Cece, will attend, but mostly it's Boaz and me studying Torah. We kept going after the book of Joshua through Judges, Samuel 1 and 2, Kings 1 and 2, and we're now about a third of the way through the book of Isaiah. It's a great way to stay connected, especially after we've each had kids over the past 5 months, and it's also kind of amazing to study these central texts of our Judaism and all Western religion closely again. I mean, I've certainly read the whole Bible before, and some of the passages are so familiar I've memorized them, but many of them are not like that, and reading them again, often after many years, gives fresh meaning. And doing so with my son, who is really bright and brings an entirely different and younger perspective, well, that helps tremendously. Back when I was in rabbinical school, a professor of mine said, "Always study something you haven't studied before, and always teach something you haven't taught before." Well, when Boaz and I read text together, I get to do both, every week, in dialogue with my son. I must say it's a great gift to me. I now see famous and influential sections of the Tanakh, even words and phrases, in a new and changed light. And the Bible, you know, the original one, the Hebrew Bible, feels fresher and more fascinating than ever before. I think this is what Jewish study is truly supposed to be, but isn't always. A chance to learn and teach and explore and discuss in a serious but open way with another person. It has been a blessing. And God willing, it'll continue to be one, for me anyway, for years to come. After all, my son and I still have to finish studying. I mean, we've only done about half the Tanakh so far. So, to play us in this morning, here's a setting of Hineh Matov by cantor Hillel Tagay. how good it is and how pleasant for us to be together and to learn together. Cantor Hillel Tagay, a past guest of Too Jewish, his setting of Hinei Matov, how good it is and how pleasant for us to be here together. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning is one of the most interesting and innovative rabbis in America, a talented teacher and leader. He has just been named the new West Coast Director of Hadar, an exciting institution of Jewish learning. Meet Rabbi David Kasher when he joins us in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning. Rabbi David Kasher is one of the, I think, most dynamic and interesting rabbis in the American Jewish community. He is the new West Coast head of Hadar, which is expanding to the West Coast with this focus on Jewish learning and service. I'll let him talk much more about that. He has a new book out, has worked in important ways in Jewish communities and synagogues in Los Angeles and the Bay Area. I'd like to welcome Rabbi David Kasher. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So explain what Hadar is, because I think a lot of people just don't know out here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. That's the point of my new position is, in some ways, is to let people know what it is. It is an organization back east, which is a center for high-level Jewish learning, with a general principle of inclusion as its kind of mandate. That is, learning for adults of all backgrounds and all Jewish orientations, all genders, all orientations. The idea is to kind of give everyone in the community access to traditional Jewish learning, to the discourse of traditional Jewish learning and living, Jewish learning and living. So we have all kinds of learning programs, both online and in person, but also there's a strong ethic of practice, of learning Judaism so that it'll inform a stronger, a more robust and meaningful Jewish life.
It's not just Torah Lishma, it's not just learning for its own sake, but learning in order to do. It's been a while since we had Eli Confer on talking about Hadar. Why the decision now to move to the West Coast?
Well, I think, first of all, they
and I don't mean to move away from the East Coast, I mean, but to expand to the West Coast, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually where I would start, is by saying that the East Coast is, Hadar is a real major presence in on the East Coast. And I think most people are aware of Hadar, who are interested. Most people who are interested in Jewish learning know Hadar is a real force on the East Coast. And there's been, in recent years, there's been a little bit of trickling out and spreading. We have Rabbi Avi Strasberg in Washington, D.C., was the first sort of outpost representative of Hadar. And now we have folks working for Hadar in Chicago and in Boston. And this is, in some ways, more of the same, beginning to just sort of spread out and try to provide more access to Hadar's Torah. But also, I think there was a sense in some of the conversations that we were having leading up to this role that Hadar is a big presence on the East Coast and not such a big presence on the West Coast, that people don't are not yet familiar with Hadar's work on the West Coast. And that's sort of my job, is to make that connection and to expose people west of the Rockies to what Hadar is, and to do some of that teaching and sort of as a representative in real time, like to be teaching myself and creating programs myself, but also to be connecting people to all kinds of, there's just like a whole treasure house of resources that Hadar has on its website and in its online programs and to some of the intensive programs that they run that people are coming to from across the country, but I hope more and more from out west.
We will talk much more with Rabbi David Kasher about Hadar, about his new position as West Coast Director, about his new book, about the Parshanut. I don't know. I'm not how to say it.
Parshanut. Yeah, yeah. I pronounce it Parshanut, but when I put it out as a blog, people started pronouncing it Parshanut.
No, that's just crazy. All right. We will talk much more with Rabbi David Kasher when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation and a creative one in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. That's 520-276-5675. Sign up now for religious school for school-aged children or grandchildren, our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah program, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation and teen programs. All are held in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Come in person Friday night or Saturday morning or both. Join us at 6:30 p.m. Friday night for Shabbat evening celebration services, Saturday morning Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson. And our musical services are in person and virtually. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, which are great, are live and on Zoom. Access those by going to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOO Jewish Radio 18@gmail, or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2Jewish, wherever you listen to our podcasts. Those comments help. Again, that's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com or www.2jewishradio.com. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Last week we talked about TV shows. We talked about the streaming series Transatlantic, about saving Jews in the early stages of World War II, including people like Marc Chagall and Hannah Arendt, and the kind of the heroes of that, Varian Fry and Hiram Bingham, the diplomat. By the way, his father is credited as the discoverer for the West of Machu Picchu. He's a really cool, fascinating guy. Totally different show about matchmaking. I have not been able to bring myself to watch this out of a discomfort with embarrassment television, but tell us about the show, would you?
I think it's hilarious. And again, I sort of binge watched it. I saw the whole series in a day or two. And one of the interesting things about it, it must have been very expensive to produce because it shot on location in a number of places: Miami, LA, Brooklyn, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Kansas City, Missouri, and all over Israel. And the putative star is the matchmaker herself, who comes originally from Philadelphia, grew up as a secular Jew, became extremely Orthodox, married a guy of an equal dedication to Orthodoxy, and together they made Aliyah, and she runs her international business from Israel. So a lot of times the matches she makes include one Israeli who might be living in Israel or might be living in LA or might be living in Miami. But sometimes one half or both halves of the couple or the potential couple want their children to grow up speaking Hebrew. So it's important to one or both that somebody be of Israeli origin, even if they've never actually lived in Israel. So it's a fascinating show because it portrays a lot of essentially unlikable people. At least I found them unlikable, some of them.
Great.
And the challenge to this woman, Aliza, to find them a match. Now, the most interesting thing about this series for me is that its name in Hebrew, and it was produced by Israelis, is Shadchanut Modernit, which, as you know, means
modern matchmaking.
Modern matchmaking. Yeah. But the English version is Jewish matchmaking. And it's so interesting that in the Israeli version, there's like no need to mention Jewish because it's an Israeli show. And, you know, part of it takes place in Hebrew. It's also interesting for me that every single Israeli in this show is completely fluent in English. It's as if they all grew up in L.A. Now, that's not the case. One grew up in Rome, in fact. But they're all totally fluent and sometimes more comfortable in English than in Hebrew. And the people in the show have very different levels of observance, from, you know, barely anything to full-on modern Orthodox in Brooklyn. There's no Haredim in this show. There's no extremely Orthodox or Hasidic people. But there are modern Orthodox who wear tzitzis flying out and whatever. And actually, of the prospective grooms, one of the most likable characters, because he's very funny, is a modern Orthodox guy in Brooklyn who his first date doesn't work out so well because the woman he's fixed up with wants somebody who davens in a minyan three times a day. And the most he davens in a minyan is once a day.
Wow.
And so that's like a red line for her.
Huh.
And so that doesn't work out, not really because of anything unattractive about him,
or but in
because
their personalities.
Of her requirements.
Yeah, just right. Not Jewish enough.
Right. But the most interesting thing I think about the show is that it portrays the challenges that a matchmaker faces and how different people can be, how irrational people can be in their choices and their preferences. And she has to roll with the punches, and she doesn't give up. She's very persistent. She finds a second and a third. And each time, obviously, based on the last date, she modifies her search parameters and she finds a better match the next time. So that generally by the third or fourth date, it's a perfect match, match made in heaven.
Well, fascinating, and not the way most people find their mates these days, but definitely an interesting show. Tom, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Mrs. Goldman, the sixth grade teacher, posed the following problem to her arithmetic class. A wealthy man dies and leaves $10 million. One-third goes to his wife, one-fifth goes to his son, one-sixth to his butler, one-eighth to his secretary, and the rest to charity. Now, what does each get? After a very long silence in the classroom, little Morris raises his hand. The teacher says, "Yes, Morris?" With complete sincerity in his voice, little Morris answers, "A good lawyer." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, we chant the dramatic portion of Shlach Lecha in the Book of Numbers, the story of the Meraglim, the spies. The Israelites have journeyed to the borders of the Holy Land just a year and a half after leaving Egyptian exile. Under God's direction, Moses sends out 12 spies, one from each tribe, princes of the people, wealthy men of high standing, to go into the land of Canaan and scout the land, see if it can be captured. The spies take a month to tour the land, and they report back to Moses, "Canaan is very good, flowing with milk and honey." They even bring back a cluster of grapes, so large it must be carried by two men on a pole. That's now the enduring symbol of Israel's tourism ministry. Everything's going to be great. Only it's not. 10 of the 12 spies proceed to report that the people of the land are huge. We felt like grasshoppers next to them, they say. And the people are numerous. The city's fortified, unassailable. The Israelites, they say, have no chance to capture Canaan in spite of God's support. It's hopeless. Two spies, Caleb and Joshua, deliver a minority report saying that with God's help, the land can be taken. But the people are terrified. Again, they ask Moses and Aaron, "Why did you take us from slavery just to kill us here at the hands of our enemies?" And it's at this point that God decides, "This generation of former slaves will never be able to become a free people in its own land. The psychological shackles of slavery are too strong to overthrow in just one generation. They must remain in the Sinai wilderness until all the adults die off and a new generation arises that has not known slavery and its defeatist mentality." Stung by this verdict, the people turn and attempt a leaderless invasion of the land without God's support. But it fails dismally. The people of Israel are now condemned to wander the wilderness for 38 more years, a total of 40 since they left Egyptian slavery, until a new young generation can emerge to take the reins and enter the land with a fresh perspective, having been born into freedom. It's a great lesson in the process that's required to cleanse the trauma of failure from the minds of a community. Often, it's not one single act or great revolution that truly remakes a people or a country or an organization even. It's the generational turn that comes from learning things can be done differently and better, that freedom is a birthright to be defended. In our own lives, we Jews today often share our own ancestors' tendency to believe failure is permanent, success just temporary. Shlach Lecha shows the danger of such belief and the importance of having faith in God and in our own ability to change for the better. Ultimately, the Israelites do enter the land of their eternal inheritance for good. Like them, we too have the capacity to create new, valuable, wonderful things, individually and most importantly, collectively. We too can enter new lands, create new organizations and communities, remake our country. What's required is faith in the support of God and the flexibility to learn, to grow, to embrace change for the better. When we come back in a moment on Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi David Kasher, will explain what Hadar West Coast is, why it matters. And he and I will compare our own theories of how we learn in a Jewish way. All that when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A bad incident on Israel's long border with Egypt took place last week. An Egyptian security officer came across that border and killed three Israeli soldiers. The Egyptian policeman, who served in an outpost located about 5 kilometers west of the border in Egypt, inside Sinai, apparently acted on his own initiative. Egypt is investigating the atrocity, but to date, the Egyptian investigation hasn't discovered that this soldier had any partners in planning or even with knowledge of his decision to attack IDF soldiers. Egyptian intelligence continues to check on whether he had any connection to activists in Islamist terror organizations. The Egyptian explanation and apology to their Israeli counterparts, at least for the time being, is that this guy underwent a process of radicalization and acted on his own, without telling his commanders or friends about his plan. The three Israeli soldiers who were killed were Oha Danan, Ori Yitzchak Eluz, and Leah Ben Nun. May their memories be a blessing. The incident aroused a great deal of embarrassment for the Egyptians. In recent years, calm has generally been maintained on this border. Egyptian security personnel haven't been involved in deliberate shooting at Israeli soldiers for almost 10 years. The government in Cairo would very much like to continue the close security coordination along the border. One reason is that Israel's considerable assistance to Egypt has helped them tremendously in their war against branches of ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Sinai by providing precise intelligence and by helping with drone attacks. Egypt has promised Israel a cooperative, in-depth investigation of the terrible events. Shortly after the Israeli side reported the discovery of the bodies of the male and female soldier from the Coed Bardalos battalion at an outpost next to the border, the Egyptians gave the IDF a report regarding a policeman absent from his post. At that point, they had already realized the connection between him going AWOL and the shooting. After killing the two IDF soldiers, the policeman continued on foot in a northwesterly direction. When the female officer commanding the fighters discovered the bodies, an alert was declared in the entire sector, and the shooter was pursued. That pursuit was conducted by the commander of the division and a commander of the regional brigade. The Egyptian policeman was finally shot to death when he encountered an ambush of two squads from the forward commands. Before he was attacked, he managed to kill a third Israeli soldier, firing from a distance. There's some speculation that the murders could be the result of a major drug bust that took place just a few kilometers from the site of the killings earlier. Bedouins and others used the long, fenced border between Israel and Egypt to smuggle illegal drugs into Israel. And shortly before the Egyptian policeman's attack, a shipment of drugs was intercepted that had a street value of $400,000. The other, more likely theory, however, is that the perpetrator was radicalized by Islamist propaganda. In other news, the U.S. State Department has condemned Roger Waters, calling the former Pink Floyd lead singer's recent concert in Berlin anti-Semitic. The concert in question in Berlin contained imagery that is deeply offensive to Jewish people and minimized the Holocaust, the State Department said. In regard to Waters, the artist in question has a long track record of using anti-Semitic tropes to denigrate Jewish people. Waters is a leader in the call to boycott Israel, regularly promoting the cause of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. Jewish leaders around the world have long said that his harsh criticism of Israel's treatment of Palestinians crosses the line regularly into anti-Semitism. Waters incorporates his Israel criticism and other political views into his live concerts, which in the past have included a large pig-shaped balloon with images of dollar signs, the Star of David, or the logo of an Israeli armaments manufacturer. Waters' performances have incurred blowback in the past, but on his current tour, he's gone further. He enraged critics by juxtaposing the names of Holocaust victim Anne Frank and Shireen Abu Akleh, the Palestinian journalist killed in an Israeli military raid last year, on the screen at his performances. The municipalities of Frankfurt and Munich in Germany unsuccessfully attempted to have Roger Waters' concerts in their cities canceled. Groups of protesters, in some cases, including local Jewish leaders and politicians, have shown up outside his concert venues. At the Frankfurt show, one protester even stormed the stage with an Israeli flag. Since last month, German police have been investigating whether a costume Waters has worn for years at concerts, which resembles a Nazi officer's uniform with a red armband, constitutes Nazi glorification. That is outlawed in Germany. Katharina von Schnurbein, the European Union's anti-Semitism envoy, who is German and a Christian, tweeted late last month that she was sick and disgusted by Roger Waters' obsession to belittle and trivialize the Shoah and the sarcastic way in which he delights in trampling on the victims, systematically murdered by the Nazis. Waters, in the past, has compared Israel to Nazi Germany. U.S. Ambassador and Special Envoy to Monitor and Counteract Anti-Semitism, Deborah Lipstadt, a past two Jewish guest, replied that she wholeheartedly agreed with von Schnurbein's take. And in Argentina, Israel's under-20 men's team defeated Brazil's 3-2 in the quarterfinals of the FIFA U-20 World Cup of Soccer last week, This is the most shocking win of Israel's in a string of dramatic underdog victories at this tournament. The player who scored the winning goal in extra time dedicated the win to the three Israeli soldiers killed in the Egyptian cross-border attack just before. The team, making its first ever appearance at the Under-20 World Cup, is now through to the semifinals. They will face Uruguay. The results came in after we finished this show. Israel, which faced in Brazil, a country known for its international soccer dominance, which has won the Under-20 World Cup five times. Israel was behind much of the game and missed multiple penalty kicks. In the 56th minute, Brazil scored first, but Israel responded with a goal a few minutes later. The game went into extra time, tied 1-1, but Brazil promptly scored within 30 seconds of the overtime period starting. Israel responded to tie just 2 minutes later. And then, in the final moments of the first half of extra time, Dor Turgeman wove between a series of defenders in front of Brazil's goal and knocked in the winning score. Turgeman wore a wristband with the names of the three Israelis murdered in the Israel-Egypt border attack. "We went through a very difficult day with the news from Israel," Turgeman said after the match. "I dedicate this victory to the families of the victims. We were pained terribly by what happened." Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu tweeted about the soccer victory, writing, "Our young team made history and brought huge pride to the state of Israel." Besides Turgeman's game winner, Israel's other two goals were scored by two of the Israeli roster's three Israeli Arab players, Hanan Khalili and Hamza Shibli. The match took place in Argentina's San Juan province, a mountainous region 700 miles northwest of Buenos Aires. The stadium was not full. Fewer than 2,000 fans were in attendance, but among them were members of the Jewish community and Israeli tourists who cheered, waving large Israeli flags. The tournament was originally slated to be played in Indonesia, but the Under-20 FIFA tournament was moved to Argentina after Indonesia protested that Israel was included in the competition. Well, the semifinals and finals take place in La Plata, where Israel began the tournament with the support of thousands of Jewish fans. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi David Kasher, is the new West Coast head of Hadar, which is starting it's trying to move its dynamic Jewish learning west of the Rockies. I know we have many Two Jewish listeners, not only all over America, but all over the world, but we are based in Tucson, Arizona, which is west of the Rockies, or the tail end of the Rockies anyway. Rabbi Kasher.
I love Tucson, Arizona. I have a special love for Tucson, which is where Rabbi Sam and I met. And so I'm very happy to be speaking to the whole West, but to a Tucson audience, definitely.
Thank you. We have to get you back here, absolutely, to teach. He has a new book out, Parshanut, 54 Journeys into the World of Torah Commentary, which has been compared to Nachama Leibowitz's legendary Torah commentaries. He has served important and kind of cutting-edge Jewish organizations and synagogues on the West Coast already. Since so much of Jewish learning is dialectic, it's, and we should probably talk a little bit about theories of Jewish learning, but it's not supposed to be somebody sermonizing. It's supposed to be two people arguing, discussing, or a group engaged in that experience. When you teach, how do you try to cultivate that?
That's a great question. First of all, I think you're right that the real core of the Jewish learning experience, which is so central to the whole Jewish experience. I mean, this is really, learning is one of our forms of spiritual practice. And the center of that is the Beit Midrash, is the study hall, which, as you suggest, has a kind of often very loud conversation happening inside, a kind of, it's dialectic, it's dialogical. There's a conversation, there's an argument often, there are voices, not just one voice, but voices of many. And that's true both in real time, there are many voices, but also symbolically, it's a tradition of a multivocal tradition of debate and back and forth and shaklavatarya, as they call it in the Talmud. So that's right. One has to consider that when you start teaching Torah, how do I bring that feeling to people? Like not just to lecture people or to sermonize the people, but to actually give them a taste of what it is to be in conversation and dialogue around Torah. And so when I think about my own teaching, I certainly have, I think because I'm a Jewish educator in particular, I've learned to teach in a kind of conversational style so that when I'm sitting down with a group of people to teach, I'm hoping to create something like a group chevruta, right? Like the chevruta is the classic Jewish mode of learning of usually paired, dyadic, kind of one-on-one, two people sitting across the table and figuring out their way through material, arguing with each other, challenging each other. And I want to teach in such a way that is happening in a room with 10 people, maybe even with 50 people. But I also want to do more than teach. I mean, I want to teach in order to set people up to be doing their own learning. I mean, it's really like a, you know, teach someone to fish kind of thing. My hope is that my own teaching brings people into the dialogue, into the conversation. But I'm also hoping that a lot of my work will be creating mini versions of that kind of Beit Midrash study hall experience. That sort of what they call Kol Torah, the voice of Torah, which is that loud voice of a lot of people in a room all shouting and figuring out their way through the Torah together.
When you are engaged in teaching on an ongoing basis, at an ongoing class, it's one thing to try to create that dynamic with a group that you get to know and you know the kinds of questions people are likely to ask, and you can kind of organically, intentionally mold them, but there's a coming together that takes place. When you come in, when it's always a different group, and I think sometimes when we go and serve as scholar residents or you're teaching a section, you don't really know how the people are going to be. Is that more challenging or more interesting?
Yeah, I think it is more challenging, certainly more challenging. If the goal is to get people into the conversation, then yes, the first time you're talking to someone and in a new setting, and when the expectation sometimes is that you're just going to do all the talking, yes, that is a challenge. And I think I would say that the short answer is that I kind of privilege regular learning. I once worked for an organization called Keva, which means like a regular fixed practice. And that we chose that name because that is the kind of learning I believe in is, you know, it's great to have an amazing class with an amazing teacher, but it's much more transformative to meet with people every week or every month or in some regular way to do regular. That's what really, I think, shapes you as a learner. And so I'm much more interested in creating ongoing learning experiences. But yes, to the extent that I go and I speak somewhere and I have kind of a one-off or even create a one-off program, I think the goal there is to transmit, to give some sense of my own passion and excitement around this material. To try just, if nothing else, just to communicate that this is not just our sacred inheritance, but this is actually, there's something exciting, dynamic, powerful, something that I have learned to crave and to cherish as just an experience in itself. You know, whatever else it leads to, just the joy of studying Torah is something I encountered when I first went off to yeshiva. And it's not that encounter is not something that everybody gets in our community. And I want to try and give people some impression of just how exciting, just how dynamic, just how joyous this can be. And then hopefully from there, they're inspired to do some of their own learning and building some kind of learning schedule. But that really is the goal. Of course, I'm trying to, you know, create a spark when I teach, but hopefully it's enough of a spark that it sets, you know, sets someone aflame to do their own learning.
These Nitzutzei Torah, you know, these sparks of Torah that you're trying to create, obviously Jewish learning today is more complicated in a way. You could do so much of it online. Tell us a little bit about your preferences there and also how Hadar makes things available in that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, the pandemic has changed us all in that way, in our relationship to, you know, there were years there, now we know what it's like to really only have the online access to learning. And, you know, I guess I must admit that before all of this, I would have turned my nose up a little bit at online learning, like, yeah, Oh, that's not real. And, you know, the real magic happens in person. And then all of a sudden, online was all I had. And I taught, throughout the pandemic, I taught just every day online. And eventually, I got used to it. And, you know, my students got used to it. And I think our whole world got used to.
I think that's true,
The not just being online, but the surprise that this could be a real depth experience, that you can have a really profound learning experience online. So now I love teaching online, and I expected that I will continue to do a lot of that, though now I'm teaching more in person. And I think that's been true for Hadar, that Hadar expanded their online learning offerings during the pandemic and is going to keep a lot of those offerings, which is great for me and my work, because I'm hoping to connect people to what Hadar is doing, and that you know, that wouldn't work well if it had to be sending them back east to experience it. Now people can just log in, and we have all kinds of online offerings. Having said that, I mean, I'm thrilled about that, and I'm thrilled that it's a part of my teaching life, and just as a teacher, it's a totally different skill set that I've had to learn. So there's something that feels like a growth experience for me personally. But having said all of that, I still think that there's the other thing we learned so viscerally during the pandemic is how precious it is to be together. And I think that there is some magic that happens in person that, you know, as good as online learning can be, there's still something about being in real physical space with someone and exchanging ideas and words together. I mean, I said Torah learning is like a spiritual practice, and I think all of our spiritual practices are most potent when they're happening together in real time, and true for prayer as well. There have been all kinds of remarkable online prayer experiences over the last 5 years, but nothing beats standing next to someone and hearing
their voice
not
the same.
Kind of resonate through your body. So I think that's true with learning as well. And so I'm hoping that I'm going to be running around the West Coast doing a lot of in-person live teaching. And then I'm also grateful that there's the online resource to tap into as a kind of, and I think, you know, I think there are opportunities to do both. Like I don't know, how well the hybrid model serves people. It's often kind of like bad video and awkward in the room when you're trying to attend to the video. But what I do think works well is going back and forth, that you have some in-person learning and some online learning that can complement.
Like all of us, I've done all of it now, right? It was only online, and then it was blended, and then it was... I will say, if you do it well, you can manage to get a blended classroom where everybody knows each other and they feel like they're interacting, and you can manage it. It was just a different skill set for me, right? Just like it is for everybody else. And, you know, when I first time I used Zoom, I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. Well,
yeah,
you know, 4 years later, it's a different story. You served as a rabbi at Ikar. You're going to still do some stuff for them. Tell us about that experience a little bit. We've had Sharon Brous on actually a couple times, of course, and also one of the more interesting congregations going on in the country.
Yeah, it definitely is that. It was a real privileged to work at IKAR. It was a real unique experience. I had been an educator since I finished with the rabbinical school. I had just been teaching. And that's a decision. You know, I decided to go into education instead of into the pulpit.
Right.
And then, I don't know, a decade later, I felt like something was missing. Like a rabbi ought to know what it's like to really help run a community.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I'm a little biased there. So,
yeah. But having said that, I think I'm I'm not a denominational guy at heart. You know, I wanted to work with all kinds of people. That was, I'd always worked with a kind of pluralistic audience in my teaching, and there was, the IKAR was appealing for all kinds of reasons, but one was that they were just doing their own thing. They weren't a part of any movement. They were just trying to create an exciting, an innovative shul for everyone. And so I was really drawn to that, and it was, as you said, it's one of the most interesting and dynamic spiritual communities in the country. And it was, I was there for the last 5 years, and I'm so grateful, not just to have been part of that exciting community that has like great Torah and great music and great people, but also I think I'm a better rabbi for having worked as a pulpit rabbi, surely. And I think I'm a better teacher for it. I think that there's an awareness of the full experience of Jewish life, you know, from birth to death, that is so, you can live in the world of Jewish education for a long time and get kind of detached from, you know, actual Jewish living. And now I feel really sensitized to the way that learning informs and supports and translates into Jewish practice. And I think that that's good for just me as a human and me as a rabbi, but I actually think it fits really well with the vision that Hadar has for its own learning, which is that there's, you know, we're spreading Torah and we're spreading learning, but the idea is that this is the kind of learning that will inform your life and your practice and your rituals and your ceremonies and just what it means to live as a Jew. So I'm very grateful for that experience, and especially grateful to have had it at IKAR, which is such a unique and dynamic community.
I want to thank Rabbi David Kasher for a great visit here on Two Jewish. We could probably go on for another, 20 or 30 minutes. Means we have to get you back. Where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about your new gig and about your book Parshanut?
Yeah, well, for what I'm up to, I would just direct you to our website, hadar.org, hadar.org, and you'll find all kinds of programs there, and you can find me on there, but you can find a lot of what we're up to for programs for kids and teens and young adults and all adults and everybody. So it's worth combing around that website. And you can find my book Parshanut on Amazon if you're interested in that. But I hope that if you're on the West Coast especially, that you reach out, and that you if you have an interest in building Jewish learning and bringing, you know, resources to your community, then I want to be a part of that. So look forward to hearing from you.
David, thank you so much. And Bahatzlacha, I'm sure it'll be a great experience.
Thanks for having me. Thanks. Great talking to you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Lori Wallmark, author of a fine children's book on the Lower East Side called Rivka's Presence. Join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night. Services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush. Come live in person or on our Facebook page. Our play out this morning comes from Israel's wonderful HaTikva 6 group, Shutafim Lanetzach, Partners Forever. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
ואת שומעת איך אני מדבר בלב שלי כמעט בכל לילה במיטה.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.